It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What happens when financial stress, like not getting paid, impacts your job performance? There are people who have been declared essential in this partial government shutdown, now stretching into day 25. To name just a few, TSA screeners, FBI agents, air traffic controllers. What happens to national security during this time of instability? Is it compromised? It's questions we're posing to Yers Miras. He is an assistant professor of management and human resources at the University of Wisconsin School of Business. His research looks at how employment shapes people's personal finances and the resulting consequences for individuals and organizations. Yers, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So it's not unusual to be worried about a personal financial situation, but how big of a source of stress is money for employees in America?
Well, money, a recent report by the American Psychological Association shows that about 70% of people in the U.S. worry about money, and it's actually indicated as a source of stress more frequently than work, family, or health issues. So it's pretty widespread, even without the shutdown or what's going on right now.
And so when we say finances, we're not just talking specifically about money per se or about a specific paycheck. It goes bigger than that?
Yeah, so it goes into debt. Do you have savings? I mean, savings is a really big part of it. There was a report, I think, by The Atlantic a while ago that reports that most Americans, or about more than 50%, doesn't have $400 in case of an emergency. And so all of that goes into that. Student loans go into that. And all of that combines together to make people worried about their current financial state as well as their financial future.
So how do you make the leap from financial insecurity, really being concerned about your situation, to an ability to do your job?
So what's interesting about that, a new project I have going on with Joe Gladstone, who's a professor at UC London, we're looking at what really does happen after a specific financially stressful event. So not just a stressful event, for something that negatively affects your personal finances. And what we find is that when people have these events, it takes away from their ability to do their job, which makes both their quantity of work suffer, so how much they do, but also their quality of work suffer. And this is because of anxiety, that in response to these events, people experience anxiety, and that anxiety takes away from the attention that they can give to their work tasks.
So workers can be stressed about a lot of things, their personal health, a divorce, an aging parent in a nursing home. That's just a few examples, all of which are capable of hindering employee performance on the job. How are these stressors different from overall financial worry?
So they're obviously interrelated, right? So if you have a health problem, it's probably going to affect your finances in some way or form for most people. What was interesting in this project where we looked at these daily stressors is that we, even accounting for health stressors, are also looking at health or stressors that are impacting people's health. This has somewhat of the same effects, but not nearly as strong as finances do, because finances tends to be this these kind of events that affect different aspects of your life, your family, how your relationship with your spouse, and so on and so on. And so that effect that has on your life really creates this anxiety about people and thinking about what's my welfare going to be either today or in the future.
We're talking with Yers Miras. He's an assistant professor of management and human resources at the University of Wisconsin School of Business, looking at the impact of pay and financial security to on-the-job performance. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a federal worker who's been impacted by the government shutdown? If so, is that causing you financial strain? How are you dealing with it? And what about you, non-federal workers? Have concerns about financial stability impacted your ability to do your job? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So let's take your research and apply it now to the federal workers, the federal government. Put this into context of the partial government shutdown. And if worker productivity is compromised, does that impact the health of our overall economy?
Yes, obviously, because if financial insecurity at the individual level is affecting people's ability to do their work, it's going to affect their productivity. And in aggregate, it's going to affect the productivity within countries, within regions. So we would expect there to be a link between financial insecurity and productivity.
Some federal employees have been deemed essential, like TSA agents, air traffic controllers. They have high pressure, high responsibility jobs. Can we realistically expect these workers to do the job to the best of their ability when they don't know when the money may start flowing again, even if they will get that back pay?
No, it's very difficult already to do those kinds of jobs. If you think about TSA and sitting in front of a monitor trying to pay attention to different nuances in the scans that are coming through, under normal circumstances, without any financial stress, without any stress, that's already a very difficult job. Think also air traffic controllers, very difficult job under normal circumstances. Now you're adding $0 paychecks to that. That is not a good combination. And so, yes, are we less safe because of the shutdown? Absolutely.
So when we look at this where, you know, supervisors don't have control over the situation, this really goes to the highest office in the land where President Trump is having these conversations with lawmakers. When a supervisor doesn't have control of the situation because it is being impacted from above, what can supervisors do to help in these situations?
It's really difficult in that point because there's really no good advice you can give to people in those situations because everyone has to make do under the circumstances that they have. I think what's also very difficult is because there is no end in sight right now, right? If there is one paycheck that you miss, you could say, well, you're going to get the next paycheck. You're going to get that back pay. But right now, if President Trump says, well, this might go on for a month, for a year, for longer, well, then it's hard for supervisors to give any kind of hope or way to reduce that uncertainty in their lives. And so I think for supervisors, it is a very difficult position to be in because they have to make sure the work gets done. But at the same time, they also understand and they're not getting paid themselves.
So as you dig deeper into this research about how our bank account balance and other financial worries in our life can perhaps make us more error prone in our work, what are some surprising things you're finding as you dig into this?
Well, one surprising thing is that just how extensive it is and how many people experience it. Even when we look at, for example, truck drivers, which are relatively, if you look at their income, they're within the middle class. They're making about $50,000 to $70,000 a year, which is what we would think of as middle class, good living. They're living in relatively low cost of living areas. Even among those types of populations, we still see very widespread financial worry. And that is because your objective financial situation and how you feel about it can vary. And so you can have people who have, you know, relatively large incomes who still are worried about their financial situation. You can have people who have more modest incomes who are much less worried about their financial situation. And so I think this difference between objective and subjective financial well-being was something that's really surprising.
And so when you go to measure this, how do you measure these types of things? And you could, because your on-the-job performance can be very subjective. I mean, one person may say, you're doing great. Another person be like, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think this is the good part about technology and a lot of companies and organizations is that there is now more access to objective data. And usually when we do these kinds of studies, we tend to rely on objective outcome data because we know that there's a lot of error that goes into subjective performance evaluations. And so when we try to link finances to performance, we use these objective indicators with truck drivers. We've used accidents, for example. So we try to use ways in which there are objective effects on performance.
What might be other examples of objective data you would look at besides, you know, truck drivers and the number of accidents?
Well, you can think of, for example, if you're thinking hospitals, mm-hmm. right? So we've done studies with certified nursing assistants. There you can look at patient safety, patient outcomes. If you're thinking about cashiers, now a lot of stores are tracking how long it takes them to serve customers. So you can use that as a way to measure performance. And so I think companies, because of technology, are getting more sophisticated in how they can measure performance, because they're also realizing that those subjective performance evaluations might not always be useful.
Is it useful for companies to gather more of this data on these objective ways to look at their employees and as it pertains to their work performance?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it can provide a lot of insight. At the University of Wisconsin, we're now creating a class actually called People Analytics, where we're teaching students to use this data in a way where they can add value to companies and better manage employees. And so I think it is potentially a positive change.
Talking with Years Miras, he is an assistant professor of management and human resources at the UW School of Business. His research looks at how a person's financial resources essentially can make them more accident or error prone in their work. Your insights are welcome. 800-642-1234. Have concerns about financial instability impacted your ability to do your job? If so, how has that played out to you? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 380,000 federal workers are required to stay at home right now. Another 420,000 must work without pay. Many of them faced their first missed paychecks Friday, and we're looking at what this means for on-the-job performance and worker productivity. Researchers have found that when someone is worried about their financial situation, that they have less cognitive capacity available to them, and this living on the edge financially will eventually spill over into their work performance. We're looking at the implications as the partial government shutdown is in its 25th day. And Years Miras is our guide. He is an assistant professor of management and human resources at the UW School of Business. Talking about here is the crux of this research. Your thoughts and questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. How do you focus on doing your job well when your mind might be elsewhere? What role should employers play here? Are you a federal employee on furlough? How are you coping with the financial stress? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So Years, in this partial government shutdown, what recommendations do you have for departments, for agencies, as they work through this time of furlough and this time of essential workers being on the job in high-stress situations?
I think right now it's during the shutdown, departments, agencies, to the best of their abilities, because obviously they're also affected by not having enough staff to really do anything. I think it's providing resources. I think that's really what you can do, with providing as much access and very easy access for these workers to resources that are out there through which they can get help throughout the shutdown. I think that's really all you can do throughout it, because again, everyone's situation is different. Some people might be able to borrow from friends and family. Others may have no one they can go to. And so providing very easy access to resources, I think, can be really useful as long as this shutdown lasts.
I've also been seeing banners on the front of websites for credit cards, you know, going in and checking my credit card. There's a banner there saying, if you're affected by this, please call this number. is that good to have?
It might be. It depends on what it is. I'd be skeptical sometimes about some of these advertisements because they might offer some relief, credit card relief, but then there's going to be a bigger interest rate once you actually get your back pay, because these companies are doing this knowing that federal workers are going to get that back pay. And so you could look, I would encourage anyone to look into anything, but obviously be skeptical.
Let's go to Glenda now, joining us from Harvard, Illinois. Glenda, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just was listening in, and I work as a site manager for Harvard Community Senior Center, and because we're under county funding, a lot of times our resources are pretty low, and so I understand what it's like to live on, a dime, basically. And interesting that you made the observation that it doesn't always mean that people that make more money are happier or doing better, because I'm just happy when I can, make rent and pay bills and things like that, and I'm perfectly content with that. But when you're operating at a level that is below that, and I'm 60, I just turned 60, so it's difficult to go out and interview and find, other work. I'm at like around, I think, $18,000 a year, which is incredible that I can continue to survive without any government help, and I mean, my rent is half that. So it's difficult. And there are days when you feel like your performance is being extremely affected by the worries, like this morning I'm driving my car in to get my car repaired, and that's going to take my account down to, to peanuts,
Glenda, thank you so much for the details of your situation. Years, when you hear that, obviously she's figured out how to make it work, but still there is stress.
Yeah, and so you have a lot of people. I think one of the things that financial insecurity does is it makes people incredibly adaptive. And because you're so focused on it, people get very creative, very innovative at trying to find ways to manage their situation. And if you hear these stories, and as I've done this research, you hear more of those stories, you're kind of in awe of how people manage their situations, have managed to get through for years on end. But it's still going to affect them. And I think that's really the big takeaway, is that, yes, they're managing, but there are better alternatives.
Glenda, do you feel you've been very creative in how you get by?
Yeah, definitely. There are ways of, a supplemental incomes, like, doing painting job. I used to paint for 9 years until I started taking care of my mother, and then for 3 years cared for her. And after that, losing the momentum of the painting and getting a little bit older, I started to look for something else and sort of fell into the senior center job. And I love my seniors and I love the work, but the income is so minimal that it's hard. But yet at the same time, you're in a situation surrounded by a lot of people. The creativity sometimes comes in by, watching for those opportunities and encouraging others and various things like that. So
yeah, and so when you look at Glenda's situation and what companies, organizations, she's at a small senior center, but outside, what can organizations do to try to mitigate this anxiety about money?
So a lot about the anxiety that comes is from a lack of what I call safety nets. And this is anything from health insurance to saving for retirement to having some type of emergency savings. So what happens, or what really drives financial worry, is having this peace of mind. You know that if something happens to you, you have some fallback. And it's when people have that uncertainty about what's going to happen to them, that's really when financial worry kicks in.
So ultimately, this partial government shutdown will end, but it's probably not the last time we'll see a government shutdown. What do you think needs to be done before that to address some of these concerns we've talked about today?
Well, I think one thing in terms of the government shutdown specifically that needs to be considered is when these employees are getting back pay, that they should be treated just as contracting organizations. You receive interest on the back pay we owe you. And this is partly for fairness, I think, but also partly because once they get their back pay, they're going to have other financial issues that come up. It's not like they're going to be able to pay back everything that they had to do to manage their situation right now. And so instead of providing just what they're owed, providing some interest can give that buffer for them to be able to pay down those expenses they had to incur just to make it through. Besides the shutdown specifically, I think there needs to be broader conversations about things like medical coverage and that really tie into, you know, trying to create these safety nets to reduce financial insecurity in the U.S.
And sometimes you look at it, it's a question of haves and have-nots with companies. You look at large companies that can offer, you know, daycare and dry cleaning on site and what have you and all of these services, and smaller companies like a senior center, there's no way.
Yeah, it's inequality isn't just about income. That's really what's always been talked about. But it's also about just being prone to experiencing financial insecurity because you don't have access to all these safety nets. And that can go, again, medical coverage, but also things like you mentioned, childcare, which is a huge expense if you're not provided that through your employer.
And in our last few seconds here, how do you plan on advancing your research in this area?
I think the next steps are really to try to look more closely at these safety nets and trying to make the case that, you know, if we provide people with these safety nets, not only will those people who are experiencing this financial insecurity be better off, companies will be better off, and the society in general will be better off.
Years, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Years Miras is Assistant Professor of Management and Human Resources at the University of Wisconsin School of Business, and his research looks at how employment shapes people's personal finances and the resulting consequences for individuals and organizations. Just ahead, we talk about figuring out how to save money when you really don't have anything to spare. That personal finance discussion is coming up next here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.